We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Hey, welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride on a Tuesday. Our Tuesday is always brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealerships. My friend Billy Nimnick and Nita Lee Nimnick and that wonderful family. They've been doing it since 1941. If you want a car dealership that truly knows what they're doing and will take care of you, you want the Nimnick family of dealerships. Nimnick Chevrolet is on Cassett. Nimnick Buick GMC is located on Phillips Highway. Frank Frangie, Lauren Brooks, Hayes Carlion with you as we get set for 2 hours of sports talk now until 4. Then we'll turn it over to our friends at Jaguars Happy Hour. Hayes Carlion, have you heard that there's a loser Monday in the offing today? Have you heard that? That rumor's on the street, you know.
I have. We appreciated the heads up. Our analytical team has been working really since we got the message this morning. And I think it's a great contest. We're looking forward to it. And we're ready to pick some dingers.
Let me tell you what I was going to do, just so y'all know this. The home run, the loser Monday contest will be the World Series. Who hits the least amount of home runs is the loser. We all get to draft three players. And what I was going to do, and I guess you, and give you, I hope you and Hayes will appreciate this. I was going to wait till about a half an hour before the show to announce it, just knowing the research Brooks put into that. But I thought you'd be so angry. I thought you would kickbox me right in the jaw. And I didn't want to risk that.
Well, I've done no research to this point.
Okay, good.
In time,
so I feel better then. Okay. Yeah, so I could have done that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could have done that. So there you go. Gibby, are you excited about this World Series or just another game for you?
No, it's not just another game. No, I'm fired up, man. It's here. I can't believe it still happened. I really can't. The Braves, when Ronald Acuna tore his ACL in June, were 44-44. And after that point, the trades that they made, the acquisitions of Duvall and Rosario and Peterson, it just all came together. It's one of those type seasons. It doesn't really come down to who's the best team. It's who's the hottest team, and the Braves have put it all together, and here they are.
Hayes, I'll give you some perspective on this. In an hour, we're going to hear from my buddy Buck Ballew, who, as we all know, authored the most famous play in the history of this series, right? And nobody would debate that. One of the most famous plays in college football history, certainly the most famous play in the history of this series. And Hayes, I think what you're going to hear is, if he could pick one championship this year, the Bulldogs or the Braves, and I didn't ask him, but I know Buck really well. We talk a lot. I didn't ask him the specifics of it. But, Hayes, I think if I'd have asked him, it would have been the Bulldogs by a hair. That's how fired up Atlanta is for this Braves thing.
No question about it. I mean, it surprises me a little bit that it's that close.
And I didn't ask him that. You know, I didn't ask him, but I'm just telling
right,
you.
Right.
I know Buck.
No, I know the vibe you're getting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, as soon as Atlanta, you know, beat the Dodgers, the first thought from a lot of the Braves contingent was, well, what's now? How is that going to affect the cocktail party in terms of, you know, what do you do? And because obviously it's a 3:30 start Saturday, and Gibby, I think the Braves are Saturday at. It's pretty early, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, you can see that
it's
a really cool
actually.
Dynamic. You can see that, you know, this has a chance to be an unbelievable weekend for Braves and Bulldogs fans, and there is not a lot of, you know, you're usually diehard on both those. You rarely see a Braves fan that isn't a Georgia fan and vice versa. So those two teams, even though one's football and it's college and the other one's baseball and it's pro, boy, they are really linked in their fan bases. And yeah, I mean, this is what the Braves have done is historical. I mean, it's historic. I mean, it's incredible where they were and to where they are now. And again, I'll say this, Gibby made the best point. It's not who's the best team, it's who's the hottest team. Well, the Braves have been on the opposite end of that. I mean, many times. The Braves had the best team in the regular season and just peaked too early. I mean, that was the story, really, of the run, other than the 1 year where they won the title. So Braves fans are going to make no apologies if they end up winning this World Series.
Hayes, I'll ask you a question that someone asked me yesterday. Would you sacrifice losing to Florida State in football this year to prevent Georgia winning the national championship this year?
You mean if you can only have, you can only win one or the other?
Right.
If you would you rather beat Georgia and lose to FSU is the question.
I'd rather
Well, if you beat Georgia, they still could potentially win the national championship because they could beat Alabama in the SEC championship and still go on.
So the question is, would you rather see Georgia lose twice?
Right. To make sure Georgia doesn't win the national championship, but you have to lose to FSU.
I would rather beat FSU. And if Georgia wins, I've lived through three Florida State national championships, so I'll survive living through a Georgia national championship. If he loses to Florida State, and obviously that then means he's lost to Georgia as well if they've won the national title. I mean, now you're really in a position of, you probably have to fire him. And that's the last thing I think Gator fans should want, because you just don't know, you know, are you going to hire another, you know, Lemon? Are you gonna hire the wrong guy and go right back into another lost decade? So no, for me, I'd rather beat Florida State, and if Georgia wins the national title, you tip your hat to them. And frankly, they've been due for 20 years. Right. So I mean, if they don't win it this year, Georgia's gonna win a national championship in the next 5 years. I have no doubt about that.
But
so
all your 1980 jokes go away.
Yeah,
and that's fine. That's why that's why I don't miss an opportunity to make them now.
Right. But Hayes hasn't left any of it on the field, though. I'll say that. You've done a great job of those 1980 jokes.
I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, for me personally, I always want my team to win. My team winning is always more important than the other team losing, than another team winning or not winning a championship. I've never been the guy that enjoys the other guy's loss more than my team's win. Mike Dempsey and I used to do radio together. Mike said, "I'll be honest with you, I'd rather see your pain than my enjoyment." He's always by his own admission. I would always rather my team win the game. What was your answer?
I think it's incredibly difficult because of where FSU is this season and how bad they are. And yes, they've got momentum like we talked about yesterday. But I really don't want to see Georgia win at all. I really don't. I might sacrifice a 1-point loss to FSU just to make sure Georgia isn't hoisting the trophy.
I'll tell you what. FSU beats Clemson.
Right.
And Georgia double beats Florida by 2 touchdowns. I'm not so sure that Florida FSU spread's as big as you think.
I totally agree.
They're headed in opposite directions. Now, in fairness to Florida, FSU's played easier teams to get to those directions.
And if Florida beats Georgia, I think the script has changed all over
again.
Well,
that's right. So we'll see. All right, we got a lot to do today on the program. Denny Thompson joined us in about 5 minutes or so. We'll talk quarterbacks. Anthony Richardson, obviously, first and foremost. But we'll talk all about quarterback play, the quarterback guru, the whisperer, if you will, Denny Thompson, with us. 2:40, Greg McGarrity is here from the Gator Bowl. I can't wait to talk to Greg today in terms of putting on Florida-Georgia. He's seen it from both sides. And now he sees it from the Gator Bowl side. So no one's going to know that game better than Greg. It'd be great to have Greg in studio today at 2:40. My friend Buck Ballou, who threw the past Lindsey Scott, great guy, a radio guy, part of our media brethren now in Atlanta, joins us at 3:00 today on the program.
Still in great shape.
He is, and he's such a good dude. And then of course we have our Loser Monday pick coming up in the 3:00.
I have some research to do in the break.
You have work to do. Yes, you do. But before we get to that, there's an important topic I want to get to. Jacksonville lost a very significant person that had an awful lot to do, in my mind, with high school athletics in Jacksonville, and he's one of the best people I know. Ray Moore, for a long time, was my insurance agent. Ray Moore was a State Farm agent for many, many years. Craig Dewhurst handles my stuff now and does a fantastic job. You know how I feel about Craig. But Ray Moore, for the longest time, did it and did a fantastic job. But before that, he did so much more for our community. He was a 17-year coach at Jackson High School, where he played – coached track, football, was a very good basketball coach, went on to be, I think, the first basketball coach at Ed White, certainly a longtime basketball coach at Ed White. Before all that, he was on a track scholarship to Tennessee and actually went to the Olympic trials in 1964 as a sprinter. Didn't make the team, but that's how good he was. Coached at Jackson, coached at White, affected so many lives, and then did something probably more prominent than all of that, maybe not more important. He was the work and the mind behind the Jacksonville Veteran Memorial Wall that you see down there at the stadium. If you've seen the wall that is between the stadium and the arena, we've all seen it.
Mm-hmm.
All those names. Ray had a monument company. He spent 4 years researching how many people in Jacksonville are connected with Jacksonville were veterans of the war. 4 years that you can't imagine the time he spent at the Hayden Burns Library on that microfiche. There was no internet back then. Researching those names, he pushed and pushed and pushed for it, and now it's one of Jacksonville's most known monuments, that wall you see down there. Ray Moore was the heart and soul and the work behind it. Before that, he was a really well-known coach in this city. a high school coach at Jackson, at White, at First Coast. He even volunteered after in retirement to keep coaching at First Coast. And beyond all of that, Ray Moore was one of the nicest people you have ever met. And I will promise you, you will never meet anybody that says anything other than that. Ray Moore, a really, really, really good man, died last Wednesday at the age of 77 of heart failure. But as good a man as we've ever had, as important a part of the high school landscape as there's ever been, a part of Jacksonville's heritage. He went to Jackson, man. He loved Jacksonville. He loved his Tennessee Volunteers because that's where he ran track on scholarship. And he loved this city. And so we will miss Ray Moore. Again, I can't tell you how many times we've been in the studio and Ray will come by and bring me a book on Clemente or a book on the Pirates or a book on old school. And he would stop at remotes just to say hello. And he did that with everybody, not just me. But I'm very, very sad to report the loss of Ray Moore. His funeral service will be this week. You can see information about that. I think North Jacksonville Baptist Church is where they're having that on Thursday morning at 10 a.m. I spoke with Dwayne Moore, Ray's son, yesterday at length about it. Jacksonville lost a great piece of our prep heritage, of our civic heritage. When you think about that wall, and it's sad to see that that Ray Moore gone at the age of 77 last Wednesday. I hope we'll remember him well. I hope you remember his family in your prayers. We'll take a break. When we come back, Denny Thompson joins us to talk quarterbacks and more on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, the quarterback whisperer, Denny Thompson.
Okay, bring it in.
Brought to you by
Zero Res and Honest Abe Roofing.
He's here.
I'm here. It gets less abrasive every time you hear it. Like it, I'm getting to where I can.
You're getting used to it, are you?
Yeah, I can stomach it now. And part of that is because Zero Res hopped on. Like I'm in the process of moving right now.
Yeah.
And easiest thing that we've done is call Zero Res.
Yeah, they're great.
Oh, they're coming in. They're like cleaning everything. Yeah, in the house.
I mean, everybody I talk to here that uses them, they talk about how great they are.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Good to have you with us. All kind of stuff to talk about. You want to talk about Anthony Richardson, or should we just forget that? Should we talk about that?
What is there to talk about? Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
All kind of things. We talk quarterbacks with Denny Thompson. We're not burying the lead here. Frank Frangie, Hayes, Carline, Lauren Brooks with you, Andrew Gibson as well. All right, look, let's get right to it. And Denny, look, you're like any other coach, and I would be the same way. You have a connection to your guys that mm-hmm. you see it through a lens. And I
yeah, absolutely.
And I respect that, and I get that. And you've always been honest about that. But now it's not just your lens. I think if he doesn't play essentially the entire game this week, Dan Mullen will be more criticized than he's been since he's been the Florida head coach. Agree or disagree, and do you think it'll play out that way?
Well, it depends. If he doesn't do that, it depends how Emory plays, right? Like if Emory goes out there and struggles at all, and there's not a really short leash there, and Anthony's in, and he's in the rest of the time, and they win, then okay, no, whatever. You know, but if for whatever reason, stubborn Coach Mullen comes out and just leaves Emory in or does the alternating series thing, I just don't understand it. I don't – people can say he's seeing something at practice all they want to, but we've seen enough in a game where that should override practice, I think. One just looks a lot better than the other in the game, and that's what you're paid for, is to win football games, not to win practices. So I don't – at this point, I'm as baffled as anybody else. Now, I will say I have not – purposefully, I have not asked Anthony about this because I know he's getting it from everywhere, right. And I don't want to be that guy. So I don't know where the reps are going. I don't know where they stand. Carson Beck was in this weekend, and Carson asked me. I'm like I'm going to tell you if I know.
Right.
But I really don't know.
Well, on the flip side, do you think – did Carson give you any insight into what's happening in Athens? I'm guessing no. But do you think that JT Daniels and Stetson Bennett will split reps during the game? Series?
I don't know what's going to happen. Carson didn't know. I asked. He didn't know. I would, and I'm not saying this as a Gator fan, because I said this last week, and a bunch of Georgia fans were, well, of course you want Stetson Bennett to play, because he's not as good as JT. I would have to stick with Stetson, though. I mean, the guy has done every single thing that you've asked him to do. The team, obviously, is built around your defense and running the ball. You're playing against a team who struggles against the run. It seems to me like if you're as dominant as what you look to be, you really don't want to put it in the air that much against a Florida team. You really would rather keep the game moving, lean on your defense, and literally just gash them for four quarters. And the guy that's better suited to do that is Stetson. And he's answered every call that you've hit him with. So I don't think I would play JT in this game. I think I'd stick with Stetson Bennett.
Denny, looking at the Florida State Clemson game, it's odd to me. Florida State now completely settled at what they're doing at quarterback. What are you seeing out of Jordan Travis? But also, what are you seeing out of a Clemson situation that's incredibly unsettled?
Yeah, Jordan Travis has been their plan from jump, even when McKenzie came over there. They've been very consistent about the way that team is built and the future they feel like Jordan has, that was their guy. And I think he's showing that now. I think he's gotten enough reps where he's comfortable. He knows what he can and can't do. He knows what the team can and can't do. The Clemson situation is wild. And Trent Dilfer, who's a friend of mine, came out and he said some things that I said back in January, but I don't have the juice that Trent has, right? So I appreciated him saying that because he's so right. Quarterbacks go to Clemson and they get worse. And it's a consistent thing. And I don't know why that is, but we're seeing it with DJ, and DJ doesn't have the talent that Trevor had to just kind of mask over it. But they're mechanically, they get worse. And DJ is not a bad player. DJ will be a first-round draft pick, but he's in a funk. And they're not a very good team. It's a combination of all of that, but I don't think you can move on from that guy right now. I think you've got to stick with him.
Let me go back to Richardson for a second because it's such a big week for him and such a big week for the Gators and whatnot. If you're Anthony Richardson right now, again, I think it's – if he doesn't play a lion's share of the game, then I think Dan Mullen is really criticized, mm-hmm. fairly or not.
Right.
I think he now comes off as smartest guy in the room, which you never want to be. So if you're Anthony Richardson, I want you to take me through all this. You're chomping at the bit. Can that work against you? Is he the kind of kid that doesn't rattle him? It makes him better because I don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Dan Mullen, do you have fewer checks in? Do you change your game plan? Because to me, I can tell you this. Shane Matthews told me we were on a podcast together last night, a video cast together. We had there was Doring and me and Shane, a bunch of us on there. And Shane said on that, he said one thing that's helped Anthony is when he's gone in, they have taken out some checks, which has allowed him to be more decisive, and maybe they should have done that with Emery too instead of expecting Emery to go through all of them. Again, I'm not the football guy. You are. So how do you go about it if you're Mullen, and how nervous will Anthony Richardson be? I guess that's the question.
He won't be nervous at all. Anthony is about as calm and cool as they come.
Okay. Seems but that way.
To get specific on this, we've seen it with other quarterbacks. Part of it is you take out the checks because of experience, but the other part of it is the defense changes. And so the checks for Emery aren't the same checks for Anthony because they've pulled a safety down.
I got you.
Right? And so you don't need the checks. When you put Anthony in, you know what you're getting defensively. You're going to get 7 in the box, man coverage, or cover 3 most of the time because they got to have the extra run support. With Emery, they can do any of it. And so I, from a play-calling perspective, and I've been consistent on this, is with Emery, it's read 1, read 2, read 3, read 4, run. With Anthony, it should never go past the second read. It's first read, second read, run. Not because he can't, but because the way they have to play. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to be in a deep zone, keeping everything in front of them, or they're going to be in man. And that both of those lead to big run play opportunities. If you look at the rushing yards, he's averaging, I think, almost 13 yards a carry this year. Anthony is, and that's part of it is he's explosive. The other part is the defense you have to play. You either get to him quick or you're going to give up a good, big play.
There's another big game in the SEC this weekend, Ole Miss at Auburn. Matt Corral versus Bo Nix. We know Bo Nix can be a good Bo Nix, bad Bo Nix. Which quarterback do you think ends up playing better?
Oh, Matt Corral. I mean, yeah, Matt Corral. I will say Brian Harsin has done a great job in developing Bo Nix. And it's been cool to see from week to week to week. I like Bo. The Joey Gatewood situation back in the day, it had nothing to do with Bo in my mind. Like, I like Bo. He's a good kid. He's a hard worker. It'll be interesting to see what the future holds for him at Auburn. But he has gotten better each and every week, and large credit to Mike Bobo and Brian Harsin. I think Auburn's found their guys. I think the Auburn fans are going to love the style of play that they play with. They absolutely love it at Auburn. long-term solution there. So Bo will play well, but I think Matt Corral is, I think he's kind of separated himself from everybody else that's kind of eligible for the draft. I think he is QB1 heading into this offseason.
Denny, what do you expect to see out of Trevor Lawrence coming out of the bye with a trip to Seattle?
I'm excited, actually. I was thinking about that this Sunday. His progression has been so – what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a first-year advancement. It's like a third-year advancement. Right. You're seeing him do things that you would say, oh, he's getting it now to a guy like Josh Allen, right? And so I think that we're going to see the Jags put more and more and more on his plate and give him more responsibilities, which I also think is going to make him better. I don't think it's going to be too much. I think it's going to get him more involved in the comfort level of the game plan. I think you start to see that completion percentage go up a little bit. I think you start to see more run plays because he's calling it at the line. So I'm excited to see, not the second half, I know we're coming out of the bye week, but the rest of the season with him and what that looks like. I think they could rattle off 4 or 5 wins if he's able to continue to advance the way he's advanced the last 3 weeks.
I got to tell you, Danny, and I said this the other day on Twitter and then on the program, that it's obvious now that when you get the right guy, you become a winning team. Kyler Murray, the Cardinals have never been any good, and now they're 7-0 for the first time in their history. The Bills weren't good for the longest time, and here comes Josh Allen, and they're good. The Bengals, when's the last time the Bengals have been any good? Now they're 5-2. When you get that,
people forget the Bucks had the first pick a few years back.
Yeah. You know, well, right. So when you see what's happening now, these teams are getting really good once they find the right quarterback. And I think Trevor Lawrence, honest to God, when you see what the eye test is, he already looks like a veteran guy. We know the hardware and the athleticism, the ability to make the throws. When you really look at it, his best receiver is gone in DJ Chark, his one deep threat. There really isn't a tight end. Dan Arnold might be one, but there hasn't been a pass-catching tight end threat until that, if he is that. His swinging out of the backfield running back that they were planning to use, Travis Etienne, is gone. If you look at all of that, and they're having to play uphill some because the defense has given up some yards, I think it's amazing what he's doing. I think if you add all of that up, the circumstance, I really believe that.
I agree. And it's to the point to where I was one of the ones that criticized the Jags organization for not using all the money available to them last offseason.
Yeah.
Now I'm not. Because now it's like, okay, now you've got a guy and it's clear what you need to enhance this guy. And you've got a guy who's smart enough that can assist you in going out and getting these players in free agency that you need. He needs to be part of that process. He needs to be in the room saying, we need this type of third down back. We need this type of Y. We need this type of X. Now I'm glad they're going to have 40, 50, 60 mil, whatever the cap is. Right. Because now I believe that you can build around your experience from this year with him, and you can be confident that he's going to put you in the right play call. You just got to get the right cats around him. And if you can do that, you're golden.
As a Saints fan, how would you evaluate Jameis Winston?
It's so funny. Like, he's hard to watch. But he's good. He's awkward, right? He's very awkward, but he's so talented. Really, I came away from last night, and what it made me realize is I think Jameis is a top 15 quarterback in the league, and his stats suggest that. But it made me realize two things. Sean Payton is a stud, an absolute stud. And the great ones, the Drew Breeses of the world and Tom Brady's of the world, they're great for a reason. They make it look so easy that even a guy who's the 15th, top 15 in what he does in the world makes it look that much harder. But, I he's the best available for the Saints. If they sign him to a long-term deal, I'm cool with that.
Okay,
Denny, so I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think the snap breakdown will be Saturday with Emery and Anthony and Stetson and JT?
Stetson and JT, I think that Stetson will take the vast majority. I think if JT gets in at all, if the game is going the way every other game's gone, I think Stetson starts and plays most, if not all, the game. I have no clue with Florida. I mean, my eyes tell me that. I'll just say it this way: I think Dan Mullen's stubborn enough that he's going to run 5 out to start the game.
I do too.
But my eyes tell me that 15 is going to get 80% of the snaps.
I think you hit it. I think I think first with the Florida thing, to your to Hayes asked a great question because I'm very curious how this is going to play out too. The thing to do now is to play Anthony Richardson because it's his turn. Emery's had his shot. As a starting quarterback, they're 4-3. Mm-hmm. It's time to play the other guy who we saw what he did in the second half against LSU. Most coaches now, and again, I'm a Millen guy, but most coaches now would say, okay, it's time to play the other guy. I don't know whether he's so stubborn that he said, because he said, then he goes, well, it doesn't matter who starts the game. It matters who finishes the game. Well, it absolutely matters who starts the game. Or Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers and Danny Werfel and Charlie Ward wouldn't all start games.
Right.
So it absolutely matters who starts the game.
You're saying the first possession don't matter.
Yeah, yeah. So who starts? Of course it matters who starts the game. And so I think any other coach now would start Anthony Richardson. But I do sense there's a side of him that will start, that could start Emory Jones just as a, you're not going to tell me who to start. I'm the coach. I know what I'm doing. And then play him more. I don't think there's much debate about the Anthony Richardson that he'll play a lot of the game. I think he should play all of it. I think he's going to play a higher percentage of it. The Georgia thing's interesting. Mm-hmm. I had Jeff Dantzler on yesterday who covers them so closely. He does the pre and post. He's covered Georgia football forever. He's very close to Larry Munson, one of my dear friends in the business, and he's really good at it. He said he is convinced it'll be Stetson Bennett because Stetson's been winning. They've been winning with him. He's been playing very well. He's played at a great level. He gives them an athleticism that JT doesn't give them. You're going to hear Buck Ballew come on today with me, and I've already taped the interview, and you're going to hear Buck say something 180 degrees different, and Buck's a quarterback. So it's really – so I don't think we know what they're going to do. I think that one's more of a mystery to me than Florida.
You're talking about two coaches that it's impossible to get into the mind of what they think quarterback-wise for different reasons.
Yeah.
One, because Dan is so good with quarterbacks that you want to trust him. Kirby, because Kirby's so bad with quarterbacks – that it's not beyond the belief of, well, he's don't care about the talent level, which I'm not saying is wrong. If he believes that Stetson gives him the best chance to win, then that's who he should play. If Florida's defense puts any type of fight into it, though, what happens then? That's the real question. Yeah. Is can Florida's defense put enough pressure on Stetson? If he's because I believe Stetson's a guy. If he comes out and he's 3 of 9 with a pick, then what do you do? And that's the part that I think that Kirby could have easily have said what Dan Mullen said, and it would have made more sense in that scenario. But I don't know. I'm quickly losing trust, by the way. And I've been a very like whatever Dan says about quarterbacks, I've always said he knows best. I'm quickly losing that feeling.
Well, I think you're where Gator Nation is I don't know that Gator Nation's lost it yet, the trust. But I think for the first time in his 4-year tenure there, they're scratching their heads thinking, is he going to out-stubborn himself?
You said it best yesterday. He's been bailed out. I think you said it on the Gators podcast. He's been bailed out by injuries.
Well, the one time he picked the wrong guy, he was bailed out because he wasn't going to Trask until Felipe got hurt, and he had the wrong guy picked. And I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I said, you know what? He's coached for a lot of years. He's picked the right guy most of the time. But if you pick the wrong – and I don't even mind that he started Emory Jones this season. Emory waited his turn. But like Dabo did with Kelly Bryant after 4 games, it was obvious the other guy was better.
Yeah.
So we got to win a championship, so we got to make the change, and he didn't. So it'll be interesting to see. Denny Thompson, great work as always. Denny talking quarterbacks. He's the best in the business. Denny, thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
When we come back, Greg McGarrity is going to join us, the executive director of the Gator Bowl. I can't wait to talk to Greg about Florida-Georgia. He's seen it from both sides. He's come down both ways of the highway to this game. What goes into putting it on? How hard is it from a ticket standpoint? How hard is it from an operations standpoint? We'll talk Florida-Georgia with Greg after this. Welcome back. Glad you're with us. Time to talk a little college football. Greg McGarrity is here, the executive director of the Gator Bowl. I couldn't wait to get you in here this week. How many Florida-Georgia games have you been to?
Well, since a full-time staff member back in 77, I've been to every game except one in 1988 when our son Alex was born.
Okay, how, is that right?
So he was expected on that game day. He was a little late. He came a week later. But that's the only game I stayed back in Athens since 77.
I'll be darned. So,
well, he came a week later. Why didn't you get to go?
If I hadn't known that, I might have gone down
well,
there.
Well, the Vince Dooley's last game, okay, is the only one you haven't been to, everyone since 77. I got a story similar to that. In 1992, my daughter was born the Tuesday. Before Florida Georgia, and I was in the middle of my 31 straight game streak, and my daughter was born in 1992 on Tuesday. I still made the game on Saturday, and I can remember, I won't tell you the joke he told, but I can tell you my friend Ray Goff, who I got to know pretty well when I was covering Georgia, I was down on the field. By then, I was at the Times Union covering Florida. I'd covered Georgia before, but I was down on the field in Munson. Lauren, I think, did the interview.
Lauren, yeah.
Yeah, I think Munson threw it to Lauren. Lauren did the interview. So I'm on the Georgia sideline being interviewed. And then I went and sat on the Georgia bench, and Goff came over. Ray and I talked for 10 minutes about kids because he had two daughters, and then I had a daughter. And so I was at the game. But I had a few more days, okay?
Just so you know. I understand. No doubt.
I had a few more. But
she had still been pregnant, maybe not.
Maybe. Although knowing me, maybe. But so, Greg, when you put on this game, I mean, obviously you've been to this game wearing orange and blue, and you've been to this game wearing red and black. In fact, you probably went red and black, orange and blue, red and black. So, but how difficult is it for the AD, ticket request, operations? Because you saw both. You drove up from Gainesville to Ponte Vedra, and then you flew in from Atlanta, I guess. How different?
Well, as the in the role at the University of Georgia, is real easy. You just flew in and went to the game. On the Florida side, Florida actually is responsible for game operations. So there's a lot of setup. There are a lot of meetings, and Florida gets compensated for that in the contract. For the trips over that check seating, make sure the manifest matches up, make sure that the pregame planning is all in place. And those are trips over, you know, just driving over. But
And that's every year, by the way. No matter who the home team correct. Is, Florida always runs the game.
It's just easier for them to communicate from Jacksonville to Gainesville instead of Athens, which was just impractical to really have any input in game management areas.
What about ticket requests? Was it hard?
It's about the same when I was there. There was constant request for that. And it waned a little bit towards the end, oddly enough. And that's the reason they're not establishing the temporary seats in the north end zone for this game. They're only in the south end zone this year. So there's probably 6,000 less temporary seats in the north end zone. But you also have you add back the seats that are normally there for a Jaguar game. So there's probably a net loss of 3,000 tickets, 1,500 for each school. But still, everybody's being able to have tickets that have had it in the past. You didn't cut anybody out. But it kind of waned a little bit just in the trend of college football in general about interest in attending football games.
In your current role, I know you want the game to stay in Jacksonville forever. But when you worked for each school, was that your thought process, or did you want the game to be in Gainesville one year, be in Athens one year?
No, I've been a huge advocate for Jacksonville, working on both sides. I'm a historical nut. I enjoy that understanding that this is one of only three neutral site games. It's been going on since 1933. You enter this game, and I think kids today, they realize what a big deal it was once they exhaust their eligibility. Like, we have the Hall of Fame lunch on Friday at noon, and you hear two reps from Georgia, two from Florida, and they talk about this game. I think when they're in the moment, it's just another game. And this year, for a lot of players on both sides, it's the first time they've ever been in that stadium with a full house, your freshman and sophomore classes. So you've got a dynamic that comes into play. But these kids, their memory, they could not probably tell you what happened in 1980.
Right.
Or what happened in certain years. Their memory is really going back to 1 year, maybe 2 years.
Greg, here's my theory on Lauren's question to you. Tell me if you agree or disagree. And I've followed this thing as close as anybody alive. I really have. The team that wants it to move is the team that's losing. I can tell you this, and agree or disagree. All through the 70s, when Florida was getting their butt beat, and even the 80s, Florida said, we need to move the game to home and home because we have a turf field. Mm-hmm. The Gator Bowl is a grass field. Georgia has a grass field.
Yeah.
They have the advantage because they're playing on grass and we're a turf team.
Yeah.
When Florida started winning, Georgia started, even my friend Mark Richt started saying, we need to move it because it's an hour from there and 6 hours from us. So I think whoever's losing wants the game changed.
No question about it. And I've always viewed this a little bit differently to where no team has an advantage. No team has an advantage because it's split down the middle.
Right.
It's a lot harder to win in Sanford Stadium as a visitor or in the Swamp as a visitor. So usually this game just gets down usually to talent level. And so there's not a really advantage you have home or away. It doesn't really matter who the home team is. So usually in this game, talent usually wins out the majority of the time, I think.
And history would support that, Greg. History would tell you, if you've watched all these games, rarely has one team won because there was home field. It really is, you know, you can have neutral site games that are supposed to be neutral site, mm-hmm. but one team has a way better fan base, so they have 80% of the fans.
Right.
The beauty of Texas-Oklahoma and this game is it's not like that. It Absolutely. Literally is. They use their half, and it's half and half. Yeah. And so I hope the game never leaves as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. We were talking about recruiting in the break with Denny, too. Everyone in Gator Nation is freaked out and upset about the fact that Georgia has a bigger recruiting budget than Florida. Can you shed some light on that?
Explain that, Laura. Yeah. Before, explain the background. A story came out this
week
listing everybody's.
Yeah, in the SEC, and I think Florida is sixth in the SEC, and Georgia is second only to Alabama, if I remember correctly. And so the recruiting budget discrepancy has Gator Nation very upset because the recruiting, as far as the five stars and the four stars, are, it looks like at least, is attributed partially to the budget.
It's apples and oranges. I can assure you, Dan Mullen, like Kirby Smart, have all the resources they need to recruit at the level that they want to recruit. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't make any sense. So what happens, and the reason the Georgia number is kind of inflated is Georgia does not own their own aircraft. I know from Florida's standpoint, having led the aviation department administratively, two jets, four full-time pilots, two mechanics, an office manager, a director of aviation, and a hangar. Okay, University of Georgia just deals with Wheels Up or Delta NetJets and writes a check. So it'd be like a lot of your expenses, if you own an aircraft, are defrayed into other line items. But every bill that comes in for recruiting on Georgia-owned aircraft, which is the bulk of the experience, is strictly going into that budget. So it's just, I guarantee, if you went through the numbers probably of the top-tier teams in the conference, they're all very similar if you based it on apples versus apples.
And that's a great description. So I want to get to dollars. Florida's got two planes. They cost how much?
I'm sure you're looking at an initial investment, $5 to $8 million plus maintenance.
Okay, so but just to buy the planes, it's $10, $12 million.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just to buy the planes. Then pilots, hangars, mechanics. So Florida probably has $15 million tied in that doesn't get itemized annually because they bought it's a capital cost.
In your aviation department,
right?
Correct.
But that doesn't go into the number that Lauren was talking about. The by example, to rent wheels up, or if you told us this during the break, but for our listeners, for Kirby Smart to fly to Seattle to recruit Jacob Eason cost how much?
Yeah, you're looking in the neighborhood of $40,000.
$40,000 for the trip?
Yeah, I mean
$40,000
because you've got it's expensive, yeah. But that was a pretty important move
no question.
At that time. So
that's why Kirby didn't want to bench Eason for Fromm. I spent $40,000+ getting this kid here.
I've always, you know, in my years there with Kirby and really all coaches, I said, tell me what you need and we'll get it done. So really football, you may have a budget line item for, but trust me, it all is very, very negligible in the amount of money because football drives the engine. You've got to know that you've got to do everything the head coach wants to do to make it all happen.
Yeah, Florida is not getting beat on recruits by Georgia because Georgia spends more money. Now, Florida might be getting beat on some teams because they were slow to the party on this facility thing. That there's some truth to that. That's a different conversation, but it's not because of money spent. So, no. So I ask you this all the time, your emotions. You're a Georgia guy, and you should be. You grew up a Georgia mm-hmm. guy. You were the athletic director of Georgia. You were on their staff beforehand. But there's a little orange and blue in your blood, too.
Sure there
so
is.
So when you go to this game, there's a little pull, isn't there, both ways?
Well, early when I made the transition in 92 from Georgia to Florida, you know, I had just left a lot of great friends at Georgia.
Yeah.
But I was wearing the orange and blue that time, so I was a wreck at the end of that game. If I think you remember it,
the 92 game, yeah.
Shane Matthews on a third down pass to Harrison Houston on the west sideline to seal the game for the Gators. I was a nervous wreck. So it's about the people,
right.
So I know a couple of people still there at the Florida staff, but you know, Kurt, those people are just like part of my family at Georgia. I mean, we hired Kirby and the assistant coaches and the support staff and the radio staff. I mean, they're really dear to my heart. So I've got some orange and blue blood, but it really is all about people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of our guys that were there when Jeremy and I were there are long gone. And so it's a little bit different, especially when it's dealing with your alma mater.
When you, and as it should be, you should, you're Georgia through and through, but I get both sides of that. How's the Gator Bowl involved in this game? Gator Bowl staff involved at all? How does this game affect your people?
No, Frank, we are not involved in the operations. It's strictly between the city and the institutions. And then ASM, Global Management Company, used to be SMG.
Sure.
They basically run it, and Mike Kinney and Bill O'Connell do a great job of running that on behalf of the city. But we're not part of that. Tax Slayer is going to be in town, so we're going to be showing them a good time and making sure that our bowl sponsors are having a big time here this weekend.
And there's a big game on Sunday at the stadium.
Hey, from the Gator Bowl standpoint, that's the biggest game. The biggest is the Little Gator Bowl, where we have eight youth teams all in the Pop Warner League. Start play at 9 in the morning, and we run through straight through the day. But what a great opportunity for young people, A, to be in the stadium, but also to play on those hallowed grounds. So it's something that we'll all get up and get ready to go and be ready to welcome these young people that will really have a blast on Sunday. So that's our big game this weekend.
That's awesome. Now, your predecessor would have spent the entire weekend in an RV. Will you be doing the same thing?
Well, we are all meeting together.
Yeah. All right.
In the mayor's lot. Rick will be there and Carol, and so we're going to have a little fun pregame, and then once the game starts, everybody will go their own separate ways.
I get that. So very good. Greg's great having you. There's so much insight you add. I'm serious about this. I had no idea that Florida had two planes. I knew they had a plane. I had no idea they were about $8 million a pop. I had no idea that they're probably spending $15 million or whatever it is before that itemized budget comes out. And so nor did I have any idea that to send a coach to Dallas or L.A. or to recruit a kid is $40,000.
There are no discounts, okay?
No discounts. There's not. Wheels Up loves you guys, don't they?
Absolutely.
Greg, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure.
Greg McGarrity is the executive director of the Gator Bowl. We'll take a break. Let's keep it on Florida, Georgia. Buck Ballew authored the most memorable and probably most important play in the history of this series. He joins me after this to talk Florida, Georgia. Stay with us.
Buck back, third down on the 8. In trouble. Got a block behind him. Going to throw on a run. Complete to the 25. To the 30. Lindsey Scott, 35, 40. Lindsey Scott, 45, 50. 45, 40. Run, Lindsey. 25, 20, 50, 10, 5. Lindsey Scott. Lindsey Scott. Lindsey Scott. I can't believe it. 92 yards, and Lindsey really got in the foot race. I broke my chair. I came right to a chair. A metal steel chair with about a 5-inch cushion. I broke it. The booth came apart. The stadium fell down. Now they do have to renovate this thing. They'll have to rebuild it now. This is incredible.
All right, welcome back to the program. Frank Frangie with you. Let's talk more Florida, Georgia. Nobody knows this game better than my friend Buck Ballew, who authored probably the biggest play in series history. Joins us now from Atlanta. Buck, how are you, man?
Man, we're doing good. We've, cheering on the Braves, cheering on the Bulldogs. It's been a good run here.
Yeah, it's a good time to be in North Georgia. You're exactly right about that. I got a lot of questions about the history of the series and whatnot, Buck. But before I get too much into it, this Georgia team's really good. Now, you've seen all of them. You were on one of the best ones ever. Is this Georgia team as good as it looks like? I mean, they look almost unbeatable from down here. What do you think of this group?
Well, defensively, this is as good a defense as we've seen in a long, long time. And there's been some good ones, obviously. But this front seven's the best I've seen. Just so dominant on the defensive line with Jordan Davis there, big 99, leading the way. And got some really talented linebackers that are all over the field. Secondary's gotten better. And they need to continue to improve because down the road they're going to face some really talented competition, Alabama. Hopefully college football playoffs, they're going to have to defend a little better in the secondary. But they're getting better, too. Defensively, this is as good a defense as I can remember seeing.
Yeah, boy, I agree with you. And it's really that good, and they're athletic. Offensively, two great running backs. Some receivers have emerged with Pickens down. I didn't know who would. But the question's about quarterback. Buck, what happens here? Does Stetson Bennett continue to play? JT Daniels is healthy now, according to Kirby Smart. What should they do? What will they do here?
Well, I was in Athens yesterday and sat in on the Kirby Smart press conference and interviewed or had some time with a couple of players. And they're expecting, really, reading the tea leaves on this, they hadn't announced anything. But I'm expecting to see both players. You know, in early in the season when JT Daniels was the starter and was healthy, Stetson Bennett was even getting some series there when the game was still up for grabs. So I'm anticipating we'll see both of these guys. JT Daniels, to me, is the guy that can unlock this passing attack. Stetson is one heck of a football player. And look, the Bulldog Nation loves this guy. But, you know, he's like 5'8". It's tough to see clearly over the middle of the field back in the pocket at 5'8", 5'9". JT Daniels is a guy that can throw it short, intermediate to deep. He can throw it outside the numbers. He can work the middle of the field. So I think he gives Georgia the best shot as far as beating the best teams in the country down the road. But Stetson brings that ability to make plays outside the pocket. And so I would think right now Kirby's going to play both and see how it goes.
This Georgia program has been so good really since Kirby got there because he recruited so many good players. Yet Georgia does have it hanging over its head a little bit, Buck. Hasn't won the big one since you did it. How is there more stress because of that? Is that overrated? Is that just a fan thing? How does that affect the Georgia football team?
Well, I think the Bulldog Nation is as passionate as it's ever been, and it's because they're so hungry.
Yeah.
You know, 41 years ago, it was a great ride. They knocked on the door. They really should have won it a couple of years ago against Alabama when it went to overtime. I let it get away. But I don't see Alabama with a backup quarterback that can come in and do the damage that Hurts and Tua did. So, you know, I think this the best chance that Georgia's had under Kirby Smart, their best chance to win it all is right now.
Yeah, it's a great team, no question. What's your view of Florida from up there? Obviously, down here, they're struggling. They're 4-3. They expected to be a better football team, Buck, than they have been. Are you surprised that the Gators have struggled the way they have?
Well, you know, I knew that offensively it was going to be a big change. Heck, last year, Trask, they were throwing it 50 times a game.
Yeah.
And we're really loving Kyle Pitts up here in Atlanta right now. But they've had to flip it over. You know, they're a run-first offense now. Both these quarterbacks can run with the football. You know, you got some quality running backs there. Offensive line, I guess, has looked a little better, getting a little healthier. So, you know, I'm expecting Florida to give Georgia their best shot. And expecting a good game early. But, you know, I just can't imagine Florida being able to pull off the upset.
Yeah, I think it'd be really hard this year. Buck, you and I have had this talk on air and off air enough times, but I'm remiss if I don't ask it. That great moment down here in Jacksonville in 1980, and you and Lindsey have done the autograph tour and the photo ops, but it's still an amazing moment. It broke all of our hearts, but it was an amazing moment in Georgia history. How does it still touch you? Do you still get talked to people, ask you about that? It's been 41 years. Do you still get asked about the play in 1980 down here in Jacksonville?
Well, everybody seems to have their own story.
Right.
And, you know, it's been great just listening to the stories that everybody has. You know, as a matter of fact, I'm working on a book right now. And, you know, it's, a lot of it has to do with that 1980 season and the Georgia-Florida game. And, you know, just looking back at that game in Jacksonville that year, you know, looking back at the video and studying that again, I just didn't realize, you know, just how talented that Florida defensive front was.
Right.
My goodness, and linebackers. Their front seven was as good as we faced that season. So offensively, we had a big challenge down there. Wayne Pease came out, and he was spinning that ball all over the field to Tyrone Young. And,
mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
We were, you know, just barely hanging on. But, you know, I just remember they announced the Georgia Tech-Notre Dame game. We came in ranked number 2.
Right.
And they announced that Tech had tied Notre Dame, who was ranked number 1 that day. And this is the fourth quarter was getting underway. And I was thinking, my goodness, how can we let this opportunity slip away? We just can't let it slip away. And, you know, I remember stepping in that huddle and saying, basically, we're going to go down and score, and we're going to do it right now.
Wow.
Now, we were thinking about a field goal. We had a great kicker in Rex Robinson.
Right.
But, you know, on the pass play, I just knew that the ball had to go to Lindsey Scott. Frank, it's a lot like these NCAA tournament basketball games where you're down 1, you got 5 seconds left, your best player has to take the shot. And I knew right then we needed a big play, and Lindsey Scott was our big play guy. The ball had to go to him. So, it was predetermined what was going to happen on that play. That ball was going to Lindsey, and then he did the rest of the work.
And I know it's a long time ago, but when he caught it and turned around and you saw that number 24 off and running, was there a moment when you thought, oh, my God, they're not going to catch him? Was it right after he caught it? Was it moments later? Take us through your mindset after he caught it and turned upfield.
Yeah, there was our flanker, Chuck Jones, was able to get a little block in on the free safety, which opened up a lane for Lindsey to hit. And once he hit that lane, it was over. And we joked around a lot with Lindsey. We had a nickname. We called him a lot of the time Racehorse. And I'm going to tell you, those Gators, they couldn't have caught him on a Kawasaki that day. I just knew when he turned and he hit that seam in the secondary that they had nobody that could run him down. So that was probably the most glorious feeling I've ever had on the football field, was watching him disappear into the end zone.
Buck Ballou with us talking about Florida, Georgia and the magical moment back in 1980. So I got to ask you, and I know people are going to ask this if Georgia goes all the way, compare the two teams. Is this team better than that team? Was that team better? I mean, that team's got the ring, by the way. This team doesn't have it yet. I get that. But how do you compare the two teams, Buck? If you look at – you were on that one. You watched this one very closely.
Well, I look at the defensive line. We had just a tremendous defensive line. Eddie Weaver, Jimmy Payne were two of the best in college football, and they were dominating that matchup every single week that season. I look at their defensive line, and they're doing the same thing right now. Offensively, you know, they had a lot of different guys making plays. I think the heart and soul of the team is similar, too. We had a lot of outstanding football players that loved and cared about each other, and being close to this team, covering them as a part of the media. You know, I sat down with Jordan Davis yesterday, and we spoke about this, and this is a tight unit. Guys like Jordan Davis came back to be a part of something like this. So I think the leadership, the heart and soul of the team is very similar also.
Buck Ballou talking about Georgia football, and I agree with you, it's going to be a tough one for Florida.
And they're getting great quarterback play.
Yeah, and they are, aren't they? In fact, I think that's what, when you said you think when you said to go back to JT Daniels, I think they're going to play Stetson Bennett, Buck, on this. You don't think so, huh?
Well, you know, I think they'll play both of them. Yeah. You know, they did that when JT was the starter earlier in the year. They were getting Stetson in there early in the first half. So I don't think that'll change. I just think Georgia can be they can be better overall with a dangerous passing game. Yeah. And so JT, I believe, turns them loose with that.
All right, final thing or two. You're a big Braves guy now, aren't you, Buck? I mean, the Braves and the Dogs, it's all happening at the same time. How on fire is Atlanta for this Braves team?
Well, our studio is right across from Touros Park. I just came from the clubhouse store trying to get some merchandise for the boys back at home. I was able to leave with a World Series hat, some T-shirts. They're going to be thrilled when I get home today. This town's on fire, and it's just so awesome to be so close to it. And we can't wait to see this thing unfold. I got the Braves in six, and okay. I've got Freddie Freeman as the most valuable player. Now, you know, I'd call it a wing and a prayer or just reading the tea leaves. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah,
I like our chances.
Yeah, and by the way, you won't be here in Jacksonville, right? You've got family duties, you were telling me off air, right? You won't be here.
Yeah, though, we won't make it this time. We'll be watching, though, and can't wait to see how it unfolds. That is just such a great atmosphere, Frank. As you know, the 50-50 split, two passionate fan bases. You got a lot of talented players. It's a great rivalry. I hope that game continues to stay in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I do too, Buck, and I think it's going to. And I know there's a lot of talk about every now and then people talk about moving it, but I think it's going to wind up being here. Buck Ballou, the terrific Georgia quarterback, my buddy who's now my media brethren. It's great to catch up with you, man. I'm sorry you're not going to make it this year, but I know you're going to make it in future years. It's still the most exciting moment in game history. Whether the Gators, like me, liked it or not, it was fantastic. Buck, thanks for spending some time, man. Enjoy the weekend.
Frank, keep up the great work. Got a lot of friends in Jacksonville. They all love listening to you.
I appreciate it. Buck Ballou from the former Georgia football quarterback, and what a run it was in 1980. Back in a moment. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, we're glad you're with us. A lot of football talk. Thanks to my friend Buck Ballou for joining us. Been a lot of guests all week long on the program. Shane Matthews tomorrow, by the way. He, uh, 11 touchdowns, zero picks, by the way, in that game.
Is that good?
That's pretty good. And Shane will join us on the program tomorrow to talk all about Florida, Georgia. Appreciate Buck being on with us today.
You didn't tell the home run story.
Yeah, I didn't. Buck, there's three of us that are buddies. Buck, another friend of mine, my friend Bobby and I, and we're texting back and forth. And it's the first time I didn't tell the home run because I think people get bored of Frank telling his baseball story. So I didn't tell it. And I was kidding. I was texting them and I said, Buck's first time I didn't tell the story about the 400-foot bomb you hit off of me. And he says, you mean the one that barely went over the fence? Yeah, that thing's still going. It's still climbing, as a matter of fact.
That was so nice of him.
For people that don't know the story, I won't get into it, but we played, we both played on these sort of a college league team after that game the next following summer, and I got to pitch against Buck and he hit one into orbit. So I've told that story many times. Speaking of baseball, Gibby, tonight, are you nervous? I mean, what do you got? Are you about 4 hours or 5 hours away, Gibby? No, about six.
Yeah, just after 8 o'clock tonight in Houston. Yeah, I think anytime you're about to go into the game one of the World Series, yeah, you got a little bit of nervousness. Yeah. But you know what? Charlie Morton on the mound tonight. I think he's you know, obviously this is why they got him to pitch in big games like this. He won the 2017 World Series with the Astros.
Yeah.
So some familiarity with this lineup for Charlie.
It starts tonight, and so as it starts tonight, we get set for a World Series that I think is going to be a good one. So we're going to add a little Loser Monday to it, a little Loser Monday feel to this thing.
It's been a minute.
It has been a while. The Loser Monday standings, by the way, look like this. Gibby has lost once all year. That was the NBA Finals.
Wow, I can't remember that one.
Hayes has lost once all year. That was the Masters. Hayes, only one loss all year for you, bro. If you knew that or not. It's been a while since we've done this.
It's yeah, that just means doom awaits.
Yeah, but I think you guys are pretty safe because I think I've got about four more planned for the year, and I think unless one of you guys collapse, it's going to come down to Brooks and me. We both have four losses. Lauren lost the NCAA tournament, Talladega, the NFL draft, and the NFL opener prop bets. I lost the Daytona 500, the Players Championship, PGA, and U.S. Open. I haven't been so good at golf. So here's what we're going to do. It's going to go like this. Total home runs. We all draft three players. Whoever's players hit the fewest home runs, because this is the home run series, if ever there was a home run series. Tons of guys with 30 over the course of the year. In the series, which if your player gets hurt, too bad. There's no fill-in, all right? If you got to pick three guys, it's a serpentine draft. The order goes Lauren, me, Gibby, Hayes, because the two losers go first, and that's Lauren and me. Players in the I hope you have you. Do you guys have your value boards done? Is your value board done?
My value board's done. I'm struggling with who to pick first overall.
Hayes, is your
value? And I expect no advice from anyone.
Hayes, is your value board done? Is my question.
The value board was done about 11 a.m. today. the discipline we have to have now, though, is we have to stick to the board.
It's all about value.
We just have to let the draft come to us. Right?
Gibby, do you have a value
sitting
board?
There at four.
Are you going off the top of your head?
No. I've got it in my head, but I've definitely got it planned out. Yes.
All right. So here we go. Lauren Brooks, you are first. You have the first overall pick in the 2021. Loser Monday Home Run World Series draft,
or
whatever we call
it. Should I tell you who I'm debating between, even though I think I've decided? Should I just tell you just for fun?
Sure.
Okay. So two of the hottest hitters in this World Series, I believe, will be Jose Altuve and Eddie Rosario.
Okay.
They both have three home runs in the postseason. They are both fantastic players. I am stuck because I have the first overall pick with who I'm going to go with.
Okay. Who you pick?
But I have decided to take Jose Altuve because he's been in the World Series before. So he's got a little bit of familiarity. I'll go with Jose Altuve, number one overall.
All right. Well, let me tell you this. If it makes you feel better, worse, or not at all. Okay. Altuve was my first pick on the draft.
All right. I feel better.
Rosario didn't make my value board.
Really?
He got hot. I don't think he stays hot.
Okay. Well, good to know. No, I have a feeling the two Braves fans will go against that, but we'll see.
Altuve was number one on the
board. Okay, good. I feel a lot better, actually.
Number one. And
then again, we're both the losers.
And good point. Rosario didn't make it. I'll go second, and I will take Adam Duvall, everybody.
Right.
That puts Andrew Gibson on the board, on the clock. Andrew.
Yeah, interesting thing about Altuve is that he has hit two home runs against Charlie Morton, and he's actually the one Astro that's had really good success against Charlie Morton in that fact as well. I'm not going to bury the lead. I'm going to go Freddie Freeman.
I had a feeling you would.
Freddie Freeman's a great pick. And by the way, I think Altuve would have been number one on everybody's value board. I would guess that would be number one on most value boards. Which brings us to Hayes Carlion. Hayes, who do you like? You got two picks, by the way, Hayes.
The Memphis Rattlesnake is on the board.
I knew that.
Woo! Like we didn't know that was coming. Yeah. By the way, he was third on my value board, so I like it. And you got one more pick.
I will take Austin Riley with my first selection.
Okay.
And then we're gonna let the analytics people handle this pick.
Yeah.
And we're gonna base this one solely off the data. Kyle Tucker, who I couldn't identify in a lineup, has four home runs this postseason. So we will take the hot Kyle Tucker for the Astros.
He also hit 30 during the regular year, by the way. He was fourth on. So my top four are gone, just so y'all know.
Good job, everybody.
Gibby, you're next.
This is interesting with the ones that are left. I'm going to probably go, yes, I am. I'm going to go to the Astros side of thing. I'm going to go Yordan Alvarez. Mm.
Okay, so now I can tell you my top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are gone. So you guys – The first six on my value board were the first six to go.
Well done.
I don't know if you guys feel that way or not. So I will be next. I will go with the next guy on my value board, Carlos Correa, which means, Lauren Brooks, you have two picks.
All right. I will take Jock Peterson.
Yep.
And Yuli Gurriel. So one Brave, one Astro.
Gurriel won the batting title this year, by the way.
He did.
And Peterson's gone. I will go Ozzie Albies since I'm next up. Which takes us to Andrew Gibson.
Yeah, I let's see. I'm going to go. Gosh, he's right there. I'm going to do it. Eddie Rosario.
Rosario, there you go.
I knew one of the Braves fans would pick him.
All right, and of course, we wrap it up with Hayes Carline from the Bowl School, please.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here, I think. I'm going to take a guy who hasn't been overly hot, but has been a great player, and I think he's going to bounce back. I'm going to take Bregman from the Astros.
How could Alex Bregman not make the 12? If you hadn't picked him, Alex Bregman wouldn't have made the 12. Hey, he was one vote shy of an MVP.
I thought about him.
Yeah, but I did too. So, well, here's what I will tell you. Together, we got the best 12. I will tell you, I don't know who's going to win, but I can tell you we got the best 12. Was that y'all's 12, by the way?
That was my 12. The other two, just in case, that I had around Jorge Soler and Michael Brantley.
I had Swanson and Brantley next. Okay. Who'd you have next, Gib?
Jorge Soler. I mean, remember, he sat out because of COVID. He had to sit out in the NLCS, and he's hitting just absolute bombs in BP. But, yeah, Brantley is—he's not a huge home run hitter. He's more of an average guy. He's down the list, but I would have considered, had I been out of picks, Dansby Swanson.
He was 20. He had 27 home runs.
Right. Yeah.
I had Dansby Swanson. Hayes, was that pretty much your 12 that we picked?
Yeah, Swanson was the highest guy left on my board. Yep. So if I had had another pick, Swanson would have been the 13th pick.
Lauren and Hayes was. Lauren, you said Rosario was on yours. Hayes was Rosario on your board?
He was, but he was lower for what you're kind of what you were saying. Like looking at it, he is so hot. I think it's a good value pick where Gibby took him.
Yeah.
I think that's where he should have gone, but he was a little lower for me in terms of a first round player because I do wonder if it's going to keep up.
I think the Dodgers pitching staff is better than the Astros pitching staff. And they couldn't figure out Eddie Rosario, so it should be interesting. One little nugget about this World Series before the first game. So did you guys see this stat? Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman, the top two picks in the 15 Major League draft, playing in the World Series. First time ever that the top two picks have ever faced each other in the World Series.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. The great stat about Bregman, or the great thought about Bregman's a terrific shortstop. He's a shortstop by trade.
Right.
But he agreed to play third base because he went to a team that had Carlos Correa and has never complained about it. He just went over there and became a third baseman. So, and again, shortstops get much more love down the road with Hall of Fame voting and the like. I didn't love Gurriel pick, by the way, Lauren. He was 12th on my list.
Okay.
Because he only hit 16 home runs. He won the batting title, but he doesn't have great launch angle. But anyway, here's where we go. Lauren's got Altuve, Peterson, Gurriel. I had Duvall, Correa, Albies. Gibby's got Freeman, Alvarez, Rosario. Hayes Carline's got the Memphis Rattlesnake, Austin Riley, Kyle Tucker, and Alex Bregman. This will be fun. This will be fun because there's a bunch of home run hitters on this thing. So did everybody have Altuve first or just me and Lauren? Y'all have him first?
Yeah, I had him right up there, yeah.
Hayes, you have him first?
I I certainly have. I didn't really think about it since I was picking fourth.
Yeah, I get it.
But I certainly have. I mean, I think that's a good pick. Well, for number one overall, it's hard to argue for the reason she said. He's experienced. He's not going to be afraid of the moment, and he's hot. He's hit 3 in the postseason and 31 for the regular
season.
And
a big part about him, he swears there wasn't a buzzer on him. All the research that people talk about. Is he's the one that used the trash can the least, and he's ticked off. He's been playing with a chip on his shoulder ever since, you know. So Altuve was by far my number one guy, and I was just hoping Brooks wouldn't take him. So,
and tonight, I don't know if you're going to see a bunch of home runs tonight from the Braves for this reason. I hope they do, but for this reason, Framber Valdez, the pitcher tonight for the Astros, is an elite ground ball pitcher, 70%+ ground ball pitcher. So we'll see if the Braves can hit some bombs tonight. We'll see.
The reason I had Kyle Tucker a little lower on my list, he went 5th overall. I might have had him 6th or 7th, only because the Braves have those 3 left-handed relievers. I mean, Matzik and Will Smith, and who's the other
Mentor,
one?
AJ Mentor.
Yeah, all 3 good left-handed relievers. And so that's the only reason I dropped him a little bit. All right, that's going to be a lot of fun. Before we go to break, I say, Hayes, would you say Braves in 7?
Correct. Braves in 7.
Braves in 7. I'll say Braves in 6 only because 7's taken, but I think the Braves in a long World Series. What do you got, Brooks? You had the Astros, right?
Astros in 6.
Astros in 6. Gibby?
I'll say Braves in 7. That's what I thought the NLCS would be, but I'm glad it was Braves in 6.
All right, so we will see. It's going to be a fun. I can't wait for tonight, man. I get excited about World Series play, and it starts tonight. We got one segment to go. We'll have it for you after this. It's 1010XL and 92.5 FM. I like all our teams. I'm trying to figure out who's going to be the loser here. There's a lot of home run hitters on this list.
That's why they're in the World Series.
I guess that is. There's a lot of home run. These are 3-4 pretty evenly matched home run derby teams. So it'll be a lot of fun as we look at this. Hayes, what'd you think of the Seahawks last night? Did they look beatable on your big screen?
They looked very beatable to me, Frank, because Geno Smith is what we've always thought, and he's a backup at best in this league. So Geno Smith is going to give the Jaguars an opportunity to go to Seattle and get a win. They had the dazzling 84-yard touchdown to Metcalf right out of the gate on somewhat, I'd say, of a fluke play, because the safety, it seemed like, should have been able to get him out of bounds. Was almost like he was surprised by the catch, but it was a great 84-yard connection. But then that was really it. Geno Smith only threw for 167. They had no running game at all. Seattle averaged 3.2 yards a carry. So I think the Jaguars can slow down the run, force Geno Smith into bad down and distance situations. And I think Trevor Lawrence is playing well enough to go there and take advantage of a Seattle defense that last night was great, other than Kamara out of the backfield catching the ball, and the Jaguars can't duplicate that. But I was surprised with how limited the Saints are. I think the Jaguars they don't have a player like Kamara, but I think they may have a more versatile attack right now than what the Saints have. I think the Jaguars are going to beat the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm ready to pick them yet. But boy, Lauren, watching Geno Smith last night, just the awareness at the end of the game, taking the sacks. You can't take the sack. They had what one timeout or no timeouts left, and he's taking sacks. And now their defense hung around with the Saints. It was a miserable weather night. And I'm never going to say, well, the Jags are going to win because it's winnable. But like Hayes said, there's certainly a chance they're going to win.
Oh, of course there's a chance without Russell Wilson. But, Frank, I think you just hit on, to me, one of the key points in this game, and it's one of the key points for the Jaguars the entire season. Will they finally get a pass rush? Because, yes, you can affect Geno Smith if you pressure him. But can the Jaguars actually do that? They've come close a lot this season, but they haven't really gotten home enough to affect the quarterback. And so that's, to me, the biggest key, because if you give Geno Smith enough time, he's got the weapons.
And I will tell you, if the Jags win the game, I mean, the momentum they'll feel, no 2-5 team in history will ever feel as much momentum as this team will. They'll be the most excited 2-5 team ever, because they'll have won 2 in a row. They'll have a quarterback who's starting to figure it out. A head coach who's a good coach, just hadn't done it at this level, maybe starting to figure it out. It's crazy to say it, and I asked John Osher this yesterday, is it crazy to say that they're 1-5 and have an ounce of momentum? Is that a reach? I think maybe they do.
I think they do as well, because if they're able to get the win, you know, now you're coming home to play Buffalo, which is going to be a loss. But after that, I mean, okay, you go to Indianapolis and that's probably a loss, but we'll see. Then you host San Francisco and Atlanta. Again, no one's expecting this team at this point to get back into the, you know, the discussion for the tournament. All we're looking forward now to see is progress out of this team so that it just doesn't look like a lost cause this offseason. You don't want to go into this offseason coming off a 1-16 and it's like, oh boy, you know, how much better are they going to get? If they could get, you know, to 4 or 5 wins, then I think you really start to feel like, okay, Trevor's going to be better in year two. I think Urban would be better in year two. You look at the pieces that they'll be able to add through the draft, through free agency, and I think you'd feel really good about, okay, maybe now in Trevor's second year, they really can make a legitimate run at securing either a wild card berth or maybe pushing Tennessee and Indianapolis in the division.
Yeah, and I think we have said so many times this season's not about wins and losses, right? We looked at the first 4 games of the season and thought there's some winnable games in there, and then we had to reverse course completely when the Jaguars couldn't win any of the games, and especially with how bad they looked against the Texans. Now it feels like we're right back to where we started. Look, 4 of the 5 next games are somewhat winnable. It's all about protecting Trevor Lawrence. We saw what happened with Zach Wilson. He's now down for a few weeks. The Jets ended up having to trade for Joe Flacco. Protect Trevor Lawrence at all costs, and the wins will come next year.
I said all along, not all along, but I said very early in the season that, number one, none of us thought they were going to the playoffs. I will measure this team when we get to January, the middle of January, early January, whenever the regular season's over. And for the Jags, that'll mean I think the season's over. I will measure them on those final 8 games, because now you're more than halfway through the season. Your quarterback, what Urban Meyer said at the presser the other day is correct. Nobody's young anymore. There's no more excuses. But really, by game 10, that's really the case. And I just sensed that in that last, then you'll have a pretty good idea of who you are. And to Denny's point earlier, Hayes with a bunch of cap space and probably another premium pick, because you're probably still picking in the top, no matter how it ends, in all likelihood, you're still picking in the top 6 or 7, if not higher. Premium pick, lots of cap room. Yeah, finish strong in those last 8. Again, I think it'll be a great momentum. I really do.
Yeah, and again, if you win Sunday at Seattle, so now you have 2. I think you can ask between Indianapolis, San Francisco, and Atlanta, get 1. So that now you got 3 wins. You're not going to beat the Rams in LA. You're probably not beating the Titans in Nashville. But then you've got Texans, Jets, Patriots, Colts at home to close it. Can you finish 2-2? Well, if you do, now you've won 5 games, which, you know, is still coming in on the under going into the season. And certainly if you had asked me 5 wins, would you be happy with that when training camp started? I would have said no. But based on where this thing was when they walked off the field in Houston in the opener, where this thing was leaving Cincinnati after a Thursday night game and all the controversy that followed that. If you were to tell me right now this team's going to win 5 games and Trevor Lawrence is healthy, I think you'd have to feel pretty good about things moving forward for the Jaguars.
Yeah, I think that too. And one of the reasons is, look, we all said this, didn't we? That the Jags, no matter how they started, they were gonna improve more in year, within the year, than virtually anybody else because of how young they were at so many spots. Number one, how young they were at the 2 most important spots. A head coach who's never coached in the NFL, assistant head anything. I'm not trying to defend Urban Meyer or make excuses for him, but in fairness to Urban Meyer, this is a guy that had never coached in the NFL, even as an assistant. I mean, when Nick Saban tried it, he had been an NFL assistant. He had at least been around the league a little bit. Urban had never been around it in any capacity. Trevor Lawrence had never played in it, so that meant, I thought the learning curve, they would race up the learning curve quicker than others who didn't have as much to learn, if that makes sense. So I'm not surprised that they've gotten better on a sort of regular basis.
Every time we watch Alvin Kamara, though, doesn't it make you just cringe and miss what could have been with Travis Etienne this season.
It does, but I hope all that wear and tear didn't get put on him this year. I hope he comes back as healthy as crazy and healthy as can be. So we'll see what winds up happening. It's going to be a lot of fun. More Jaguar talk coming up as the week goes on. We get closer and closer to the Seattle game. Certainly looking forward to that. I'll be on the road on Friday, by the way. So you guys will have the show on Friday. But we got some fun shows coming up Thursday. We're celebrating Florida-Georgia for the second straight year at Dome Hats, Lauren. I'm looking forward to that.
That's right. We'll be on 3rd Street at the beach on Thursday. Going to be an absolute blast from 3 to 6. And then they've got a happy hour coming up after that. So they'll have a little live music and certainly some Florida-Georgia merchandise as well. But, yeah, it's going to be an absolute blast. And then on Friday we'll be at Island Wings. Yeah. You'll be on the road, but we will be there and going to have just another great Florida-Georgia week. It's going to be fun.
It's about as good as it gets. Hey Hayes, question you asked Denny. Same question for you. What do you think the breakdown? And by the way, if you guys heard Buck Ballou, he said just the opposite of what Jeff Danzler said. Jeff Danzler said, "Got to believe it's Stetson Bennett's game." Buck Ballou said, "Got to believe they go back to JT Daniels because he changes things with the passing game." Same question to you, Hayes, that you asked Denny. Percentage breakdown of quarterbacks for both teams.
I think JT Daniels plays 60% and Bennett plays 40%, and I think Richardson plays 85% and Emory plays 15%.
What you, Lauren? Agree or disagree with all that?
Hayes's first one, the Georgia one, that would shock me. I think if one of the quarterbacks is going to play more than 75%, I think it's going to be Stetson Bennett. And then Florida, I think Emory starts. That's what I said last week. I think Emory starts and Anthony plays more than 80%.
I think Stetson Bennett plays, and I'm not sure JT Daniels gets a snap. That's my prediction with Georgia, unless it gets bad.
Right.
You know, and Florida shocks the world and goes up 14-7.
Or if Georgia's up by a lot, then they also give that.
And
time
so,
to
but
JT.
But I agree with you, Hayes. I think Anthony Richardson plays almost the entire game. The more I think about it, I think Anthony will start the game. I don't think Dan's going to be that stubborn about it. I think he'll start the game.
Because that's the thing. You don't want to run Emory out there to booze. You're already going to have the Georgia contingent booing. You really don't want the Florida contingent booing as well.
Yeah, and really, the pressure that would be on Emory Jones, not that guys shouldn't have pressure on him, but the added pressure of no matter what you do in the first series or two, if you don't throw an 80-yard touchdown, you're probably coming out of the game. Why put a guy through that?
Right.
The more reps that Anthony Richardson gets in this game, the better he'll be as the game goes on. He should start. Starting quarterback matters. Dan Mullen said, doesn't matter who starts, it matters who finishes. It does matter who starts. That's why we have starting quarterbacks. That's why Kyle Trask started every game last year, because it mattered who started. So, yeah, it does matter who starts the game, and I'm hopeful Anthony Richardson will do it. What a weekend of football we've got coming up. I'm very, very excited about it. Florida-Georgia weekend is like none other, and I can't wait for it to get here. Folks, that's our program. But don't go anywhere. Jaguars Happy Hour comes up right now. J.P. Shadrick and company have that for you, and it includes the Urban Meyer Show. J.P. and Jeff Lagerman, followed by Urban Meyer, joining them in the 5 o'clock hour. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. For Hayes, Lauren, and Gibby, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.